for coaches, by coaches, this is Soccer Chat with Nick Rizzo and Sean Sauterly. Brought to you by Social Media for High School Athletes.
We're back once again. It's another exciting week here at Soccer Chat, brought to you by Social Media for the High School Athletes. You can follow them on Twitter at HS Social Media. You can also, they have a website that you can access by going to www.socialstudentathletes.com. Once again, that's www.socialstudentathletes.com. Big thanks to them for putting the show out for us. My name is Sean Sauterling, and as always, we have Nick Rizzo in the house with us. And Nick has been on, as you heard last week, he was at camp. And you mentioned that every year at camp, you learn what the new craze is. What did you learn this year?
So I don't know the name of it, but every time my team scored a goal, they would start doing this dance. And I don't know the dance, but you like swing your hips and like your arms in front and behind.
Is it the backpack kid?
That might be it. I don't know the name of it.
I don't know the name of the dance. I just know it's the backpack kid.
Then probably. So I'm not great at it, but I know the backpack kid now.
Keep a lookout for Nick's Twitter, because he's going to post a video of him doing that dance probably sometime this weekend, right?
Yeah, or like in the next year. Just keep looking. It'll get there eventually.
Go ahead.
No, yeah. So, yeah, no, I was I finished that up. And it was funny. I with a coach at UW, Paula, was giving her speech at the end and was talking about our two assistant coaches and how they helped and that they pretty much do everything. And she's just a talent. And that's how I was like, oh, that's pretty much me and Sean. Like, Sean does everything, and I sit here and come and talk.
Stop.
And I'm the talent, you know. I just
stop. You are the backbone to the show. So huge show this week. I enjoyed the fact that, again, the purpose of the show is to network and to meet coaches that we've never met before. And when we've seen our guest this week, I've seen her on Soccer Chat and just saw, you know, that she coached at UWSP, and it was just kind of I've never heard of that school, yada yada yada. And you know, then she reached out that she that we'd want to do the show with her, and then you hit me with the like, do you know who this is? And I was just like, yeah, it's Don from Soccer Chat. And he was like, do you know who this is? Four-time national champion, former national team player. And it was like, whoa, I need to Google this. And it's one of those things that's like shocking. And it's something that kind of comes across. Like I constantly refer to Dawn as a baller because she has four national championships and she won a national championship as a club player. But, and what I think is so cool about her is that she's such a baller. She doesn't have to tell you or brag about being a baller. And that's the thing I really like about, I like our conversation. I have liked getting to know her since we've been talking to her, is the fact that, you know, here's someone who's played with the greats of the game and is so like, just like the person next door, you know, that you can talk to. And that's what I came across this so interesting, was the fact that, again, here's this four-time national champion, but I think her phrase is like, if people want to know about it, they'll Google it. Well, by God, I Googled it, and and I'm glad that I did. And I think this week was a really good get on your part. So this show is all thanks to Nick. Everybody can thank him via Twitter at, what's your handle?
I practiced this week. It's at Coach N Rizzo. Perfect, so I didn't forget. You don't have to edit it out this week. We're all good.
So make sure to let Nick know that you appreciated this week's episode. And let's get into the interview now, because we're going to stop talking. Let's get straight into the interview. It's our Soccer Chat weekly interview once again. And I think this may be the biggest guest that we have so far. Not only just in her playing career, but the fact that she is still currently a baller when called upon, which is very rare. And if you get the chance to see her play, there's a pretty good chance that you're paying some really good money. So we may give her the nickname of pay-per-view from here on out. But we have Dawn Crow with us here. Super honored to have you on here. You know, I had to admit, when Nick had told me that you wanted to be on the show, I've only followed the game of soccer probably since 1994. And I never really followed the women's game until 98 was the first World Cup win.
99.
Sorry. So that was really the first, that was like my introduction to women's soccer. And so Nick is telling me, you know, about your career, and I'm starting to look it up and I'm going, holy crap, like big deal here. So not only are we going to call you Mrs. PPV, pay-per-view, we're going to call you the big deal, but I'm super happy and honored that you have allowed us to talk with you in our amazing journalistic ways that we do.
Oh, I hear you guys are phenomenal and everybody's lining up to talk to you.
Well, we're trying. You know, Nick is the professional journalist. I'm the psychiatrist, I guess, of the two. But, you know, just kind of give those.
I talk to most of my coaches. I probably need to hang out with you more.
You know, just give us for those that may not know, give us just a quick background on you, and then we'll get into how much of a baller you are after that.
All right. Background, obviously, I grew up in Dallas, played club ball there. Won a youth national championship with the Texas Longhorns in 1991. Went off to the University of North Carolina. Won four national championships. There,
baller status.
Played with the national team. Played, you know, with the youth national teams. You know, just really the big thing for me was just to play as much as I possibly could. So I was lucky enough to do that. I've been a assistant coach at Virginia Commonwealth and UNC Wilmington, assistant coach at Mississippi State, at Alabama, was a head coach at Duquesne University up in Pittsburgh, and then was an assistant at Fairfield University, and then came home to Dallas and taught high school, worked with FC Dallas, who, major props to them, just won a U16 ECNL national championship, and then taught at the kind of our rival high school growing up, taught soccer and was the U.S. history team lead for the high school. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of it. Now I'm the head women's soccer coach here at the University of Wisconsin-Stevensburg.
And the cool thing is, like, I mean, you've literally been on every level when it comes to playing and coaching. You've played, yes, you know, at the local club level, and you've played at the national level. National team level, and you've coached at the Division I level, and now you're coaching at the D3 level. How much did going from, you know, playing on all those different levels, how did that help you in coaching, being able to switch between the different levels? Or I guess the adjustment, how much easier was it for you to adjust?
I think the big thing that from the adjusting standpoint, it was always, you know, you've got to, the quicker you get in and kind of figure out who you're playing with or who you're coaching and what motivates them and how to motivate them. You know, that always plays a huge deal, but you know, just what that motivating factor is normally different. You know, like at our school, there are a lot of kids that are motivated by grades and something else. And, you know, sometimes you have kids that are just going to school to play soccer and, you know, it takes them a little longer to realize, well, I should probably maybe go to class. So you get a lot of that type of thing. I think the other aspect of coaching at different levels is, for me, it was the big thing of putting them in situations where they're going to be successful. You know, I think a lot of times you take over a team and they're like, I'm a forward. And you're going, who ever told you you're a forward? Outside back, you know? And so it's convincing that player that that's where they should be, or in how you want to play, kind of reinforcing the fact that, you know, I think you do a much better job here. We can get you to go forward. And so really trying to find a way to buy into what it is that you're trying to get them to do. And I think different levels, it takes a special player to get out of the stage and engulf that team atmosphere type of thing. And so, you know, no matter what division you're in, that's still there. And I think the other aspect of it is, you know, most kids still want to win, and it's just a matter of how bad they want to win.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm recruiting at UWSB, I, you know, specifically ask them, do you hate losing more than you love winning, because that's the type of player I want. Because I hate to lose. Like, if I'm playing Monopoly, which is the longest game ever.
Yeah, now, that one, I'm not smart enough for Monopoly.
Yeah, I may kick the board over or something. Oops, sorry.
Note to self, do not play Xbox with Don, because a TV might get broken. So growing up as a player, going from, you know, national championship in the club level straight to UNC playing for, you know, arguably one of the greatest programs of all time and with some of the greatest players of all time. What was that experience like for you, going from coming fresh off a national title with your club team, going straight into the prophecy that is, you know, UNC women's soccer?
You know, it was really funny. Like, I think, you know, you walk in and most people are very overwhelmed with, like, oh my God, this is Mia and that's Christine Lilly and oh my God, you know. But like, I was just probably the most arrogant freshman because I could do everything. I've done everything. Why wouldn't I be, you know? But so, and then I didn't make fitness. So that was a big thing for me. And I was I felt like I was a permanent fixture of the Breakfast Club, where we got up early every morning and ran, and, you know, before practice, before two-a-days and whatnot, until we passed. You know, it was a very humbling and a quick humbling experience. I missed the first travel, which happened to be my hometown. So it was, you know, it couldn't have been a bigger slap in the face, you know. So, and the girl that played in front of me was a senior, so it was kind of, you know, double whammy type of a deal. So I knew it was kind of like, I get there. And so for me, it was really about pushing through things that I wasn't used to. You know, everybody's a baller, you know, mm-hmm. If you're going there to begin with, you have that mentality that, you know, I didn't know how to train. I just kind of, I did what I was supposed to do. So, you know, that was a tough go for me. And so I felt very comfortable by the time the NCAA tournament rolled around, because I was getting playing time and I was in the top 18. So I got to travel to all the soccer stuff. Well, I think we played everything at home. So I got to walk onto the field and warm up and play some. So I got to play in the championship game against Wisconsin. So, you know, I was able to do a lot of that stuff. So, but by the same token, you know, my mom was ever so nice. And I was like, hey, when are you coming up to visit? And she's like, why would I waste my money? You're not playing. And I was just like, okay, slap, slap. All right. Sounds great.
Yeah. I couldn't imagine being in that spot where you're at of, you know, the whole fitness test aside or the arrogant thing aside, that whole thing of being like the player where you're from. And now you're going to another place and you're not even consider one of the top players. And when did it, and not to throw a pun at you that you've probably heard before, but was the not going back home to play, was like, is that when it dawned on you that, hey, like I need to do something to get myself on the field?
Oh, totally. You know, and it was interesting because it was just like, you know, things came very natural to me as a player. So I didn't really, there wasn't a lot of adversity that I experienced in youth ball. You know, as soon as the seasons were over, I basically would get those phone calls to be recruited to go play on another club team or, you know, any of that kind of stuff. As soon as we were kind of in that, you know, stage of clubs. So no one ever would tell me whether or not, you know, oh, you were horrible today. Like, no one even thought about saying that to me because they, you know, I guess they thought I was really, really fragile. It wasn't until spring of my freshman year, I started seeing a sports psychologist at Carolina. And, you know, it you know, put, like, I had a huge fear of failure. So instead of trying, I would just say, well, you know, if I would have tried, I would have been fine. And it was just a different thing that I'd never even thought of in that light. And so, you know, by the time the end of the spring of my freshman year, Anson was like, you know, you're easily the most improved player that we've had this spring. You are playing with more confidence. You're kind of doing whatever. And so I went into my sophomore season starting and and doing well. And I think I logged the most minutes on the team that year, and I played in the back and I played center mids.
When you decided to go to North Carolina, how many of those big time players did you know beforehand? Because my thought is you're this big star where you're from. If you don't know that many people who are going to be on the team, that you're just like, I'm going to step in. This is my team. So like how many of them did you know beforehand?
Yeah. I had played when we would go in regional and national camps, mainly national camps. I'd played with most of them. Shelly Finger, who was our goalkeeper my freshman year. We were roommates and we both played on the same club team in Dallas. Then when we went off to national camp in Colorado Springs, that's where I met Tisha Venturini and Carrie Sanchez. And we actually ended up playing them in the third place game of nationals one year. So I had kind of known them from that as well. And then Danielle Egan, who her and Roz were with Region 1. And so when we played Region 1, I had met them. So we pretty much knew everybody who was coming in our class from the different interregional events and from national camp and stuff. And so our recruiting class was ranked top in the country that year as well. And, you know, a lot of, like, you know, everybody stepped into a starting role except for me.
That's gotta be hard.
Oh yeah. You know, I mean, it's probably the first time in my life I'd never start. And I was just like, what the hell? What? I gotta be fit.
Yeah. Who's this coach think and he so, is? Does he know who I am?
Exactly.
You should have walked into Anza's office, slammed your fist down, and be like, do you know who I am? Do you know who I am? And take the goalkeeper roommate with you back. She knows who I am.
Yeah, really.
I'm joking. I would never walk into Anson's office and do that.
No, and that, you know, and it's funny because like Anson and I had a definite different relationship. You know, I think a lot of how we communicated was through music. And so like, you know, I'd have different music and he would always ask me when we'd be on road trips, you know, oh, what are you listening to? Hey, can I listen? You know, that kind of stuff. And so it really how we bridge stuff, because I wasn't going to tell him anything that was going on in my life in general type of a deal. And he had his wife is a dancer and his oldest daughter, Michelle's a dancer. And so music has always been kind of his big thing with them. And so it's for us, it's always been kind of how we ended up communicating with stuff.
I feel like music is a big thing that does bridge a lot of players and coaches. Because even if you don't listen to the same things, like there's just something about music is like a universal language that, like you said, it bridges these gaps between, you know, different personalities.
Say that I'd probably work, you know, if soccer coaching wasn't going to be my, probably work for Time Life Music, creating the best of the 60s, 70s, and 80s mixes for him.
You have a radio DJ in future.
Yeah, so, totally. You know, just one of those things, I guess.
I like the thing about the wearing the freshman year ring, because as you've stated before, like that was your first year of playing where you weren't just given everything. How much of that is something that you really push forward with your current players about, like, you know, I don't care where you've been before, like this is a whole new fresh start, because essentially that's what I went through.
Like we address it a lot. We talk about how, you know, during games, this may be the first and only time anybody ever sees you. Are they going to walk away saying, dang, that number, you know, 8 was phenomenal? Or are they going to walk around going, God, I can't believe that number 8 and she starts. What's up with that? You know, that coach doesn't have a clue, you know, whatever. And so, you know, we talk a lot about that. We talk about, you know, no longer the I've done in the past, but it's what you do every single time. And that's, you know, like early in my career, I had a little bit of an issue in terms of losing and thinking everything was my fault. And how can I get these kids to play? They just, you know, I always wanted to go out and play, and no one ever had to question my work rate, or, you know, I was never going to let my team down. And, you know, that was the big thing for me. That was what really motivated me as a teammate. And so, you know, early on, like some of them would think that I'm comparing them to my teammates in college, which I always thought was kind of interesting, because it's like, no, I'm comparing you to the best you that you have shown me. So if you're not playing at that level every single time, that I know you're leaving something to get to that level every single time. I would never compare you to somebody I played with because it's a total different game than it was then.
Because there will be another, there will never be another Mia Hamm.
Correct. There will never be another.
And you, honey, in the back row, you are not Mia. Stop trying to be her.
Pushing them is basically what you're supposed to do as a coach. My job as a coach and as a mentor is the you are when you come in on campus. It's my job to make you a better person, better player. And then when you leave our campus, a better human being than what you were when you got here. And that's my favorite part about the coaching atmosphere is that's the expectation. And if that player doesn't leave here being a better person than what they were, then I take full blame for that type of a deal. Because obviously, did I hold her to the standards that we have? Did we hold her accountable? Did, you know, what did we mess up on? You know, so I think that that's a huge part of it.
How much from your playing experiences do your players ask about, not so much in just like wanting to know, but almost more of that, you know, in the old days of being in the car with the veteran and asking them questions about, you know, what it was like when they were younger and when they played. How many of your players ask you questions about the games that you played, not so much just to hear the stories, but to try to get that education of when I'm in this situation, here's what worked for my coach and this great team. How can I attempt to do the same? Or how can I apply that to my current game?
Well, it's really kind of interesting. Some of it is I think they're still amazed that I played at that level.
Until you step on the field, you know? And they see that you can still ball.
As long as it's in a 10 by 10 space, I'm good. But the big thing for me is, you know, some of them will be like, a lot of the interaction that I've had with them hasn't necessarily been soccer-wise. Like, I think they asked me to bring in a video of a game that I played in college. Because they were like, yeah, whatever, yeah, you know. So I brought in a video of our 92 national championship game. And I score a goal against Duke in that championship game. And it was humorous as could be because it was with my right foot. So my first collegiate goals, right foot, and it's from 40 yards out. So they're just like, okay, you just scored in a national championship game, you know, and it was very hilarious to watch their reaction kind of a deal. And, you know, I always say, you know, I've been there, done that. You know, for me, it's about getting you guys to that level and that experience, because you don't necessarily remember the fact, you know, I said, you do remember the fact you won a national championship. I go, but you're going to remember the after party, or you're going to remember the camaraderie within the group, and you're going to remember the stupid stories that you end up telling when you're my age, kind of a deal.
Yeah.
So I get a lot of those, but by the same token, I think they're more amazed. Like, we brought the team to, where did we go? Minnesota to watch the women's national team play. Right. And talking with Jill Ellis about having the girls meet her and stuff. And so Jill had, we've been phoning back and forth type of a deal. And so, and one of the girls was like, you have a call from Jill Ellis. Wouldn't that be funny if that was the national team coach? And I just kind of was like, yeah, that'd be pretty funny. You know, like, yeah.
Oh, don't worry. That's just Jill.
So, you know, but that was the whole thing. And they were just like, oh, you know, Matthew McConaughey calls me all the time. And I said, oh, does he answer your text back or whatever? And she's like, well, no. And I go, that's the difference. You know, like, you know, it's just, this is my life. These are people that I know, like, you know, Sally over there type of a deal. So, it, you know, like it, the cool part is I can introduce them to them, you know, like me and those guys are coming in to do camp for us. As a little bit of a fundraiser and do their team first camp, and all my girls get to be on staff. And, you know, so there, you know, it, and at our level, it's all about the experiences and what can you do that's different than somebody else or whatever. Well, now all these girls get to come in and be on their staff and get to work with Mia and Christine and, Tisha and then Ange Kelly, and just, you know, basically for me, it's an alumni event, and for everybody else, it's like, oh my God, yeah. You know, but we get to catch up and talk about our kids and our family and, you know, that type of stuff.
How many times will you find yourself going, oh, that's just Mia, don't worry about her?
Probably not as much as everybody would think.
Because I feel like we kind of our joke on the podcast is that Nick is a fanboy of everybody that we meet. Like, how many of your girls like are going to freak out? You're going to be like, hey, you have to work. You can't just follow Mia and Christine around all day.
Yeah, and again, it's the whole thing. Like, it's that whole, like, they're going to be able to turn to their kids and be like, dude, I met Mia and I've met Christine and that, you know, and people who I'm just like, okay, so what? They idolize them. You know, like one of the questions I think I get asked a lot is who was your favorite person to play with? And it's really funny because I like playing with Christine Lilly because she never really had an off day. She did everything that you would ever want, especially as a defender. She would always come back and mark people. She would always come back and do the extra work. That was just her thing. And like, how can you not love playing with a person like that? She made my life a heck of a lot easier. So it was awesome.
Okay. That she's actually was always my favorite player. So that's awesome. Like, I would watch it. Like, everyone had like Mia Hamm and like Michelle Akers and everyone, like all like the big name ones. And I remember when we used to watch in 99, I would like, my mom would ask me, she'd be like, who's your favorite player? And I was like, well, like Christine Lilly girl. Like, she's the hardest working one. Like, she does all the grunt work for everyone. And she was always my favorite.
It's really funny because, like, you grow up playing with people like this. And, like, I remember we went in and we played we were playing 7v7 tournaments. It was during a national event, whatever. And so I actually had, at one point, two inner thigh bruises from blocking shots. And one of them was from Michelle Akers. And it was like I could make out the stitching on the Lanzero soccer ball kind of a thing. And so that was on my left leg. And then, like, I swear, not even like 10 seconds later, Amanda Cromwell hits a shot. And that one was on my right leg. And it was like, okay, well, I'm property of Pakistan. Great. You know, type of a deal, you know, because it's like, you know, 2.5 weeks later, and I still have these bruises. And I'm just like, God, people are going to think that I do here type of a deal. So, you know, it's one of those where you think, yay, I played with them. And then you think, oh my God, that hurt like no tomorrow for a couple. You're like icing your inner legs because you keep blocking shots. But, you know, like, I guess it's kind of cool to be able to say, oh yeah, I totally, you know, type of a deal. So, I mean, for me as a player, it was such a phenomenal environment to be part of. You know, I mean, every day in practice, I got to defend against Mia and Christine Lilly and, you know, those guys all the time. How could I not become a better player? And it is, how could I not, oh, we're just playing so-and-so today, you know, type of thing. Yeah. All week I've gone against Mia. I'm ready.
It's funny with the whole, the 99 World Cup thing. I actually met Brandi Chastain in 2008. And I met her at the NSCA convention, and I was talking to her, and I said, this is totally a weird story, but I was like, I link that World Cup moment to some of the like great historical things in life, because like our grandparents can tell you, or, you know, our grandparents can tell you where they were when we landed on the moon, or where, you know, Pearl Harbor happened, things along those lines. And I was like, but for whatever reason, the women winning the World Cup is like that one thing. Like, I remember exactly where I was at, the time, the day, who I was with, because I was in eighth grade going into my freshman year. A bunch of my buddies and I and our moms were eating at a local Chili's because we were all heading to the WWE show with The Rock afterwards. I was the only soccer guy.
So you smelled, he was.
I was the only soccer guy. So I was like, we were going between our table to the bar because that was the only thing that had the TV. And we were watching when it got the penalty kicks. And I said, and as the more PKs started going, I was like, more of my friends started coming up to watch with me. I said, in the moment that you scored and when the famous, you know, shirt ripping off came over, every single one of my mm-hmm. buddies were all like, soccer is awesome. And so I told her, I was like, you know, maybe, maybe not so much like their, what, you know, their impact they had on it of that moment. I was like, but for me, that moment is, I will die knowing exactly where I was at exactly when that happened. And it was just, it was so cool for her to be like, that's cool that you could sit here and say like the exact time, who all you were with. And she was like, was the wrestling show good? I was like, The Rock was awesome. He threw a Pepsi on me. So it was like a day to remember for me. But Ken, you know, my last question is, you know, you've coached at the Division I level, you're at the Division III level. How much, because I mean, obviously you love what you're doing now. How much of your current experience at that Division III level do you go back and say, man, if I could have done what my girls are doing? Because I know you said before about it's so cool that your players will just stop in your office just to say hey and talk about whatever.
Right.
Compared to the Division I level, it's always money, 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 playing time, playing time, playing time. Some of the things that you've experienced, it's been a positive, because I tell kids all the time in the whole recruiting sense is that there's no difference between the size of a national championship ring from a Division I, Division II, Division III, junior college, NAIA. Right. The rings are all the same size. And I've been on staff with a Division I team that got absolutely crushed by an NAIA team. So, you know, this whole theory of level of play is all BS, and it drives me nuts. What are some of the things that, I know this isn't the right word to say, but how many of your experiences and what's been some of the main experiences so far at the Division III level that's made you go like, this is great. Like these kids get this awesome opportunity, and maybe opportunities that, you know, maybe you never got playing at North Carolina or attending school at North Carolina.
I think the big thing is, and I will be the first to say my experience at North Carolina, I really didn't take all of it in until after I was done with soccer. I ended up taking an extra semester. And during that semester, I got to listen to Maya Angelou speak. I got to go to more concerts. You know, I mean, I saw Dave Matthews in a venue that was like 50 people, you know. So there were all these cool things that I got to do because I wasn't playing soccer. You know, I really wanted to study abroad, and I still, to this day, it's one of those experiences that kills me that I didn't get the chance to. But like, you know, everybody's like, oh, well, you went overseas and played a little bit with the national team. Yeah, but you're not immersed in the culture. You know, you're there specifically to play. You know, you may get to go to a museum here or, you know, something else of relevance in that community, but like, you don't really get to, you know, talk to the man down the street when you go to get vegetables. I don't know why that came to mind, but like, you know, you don't get to have those types of interactions with people on the road when you're doing that kind of stuff. And that to me was a big thing. And like, we've had, you know, we had a young lady who studied abroad last fall. And it was really funny because other coaches were like, you let her go during the season. Well, the young lady wants to major in international law, and she was going to Hungary to be in the epicenter of the big, you know, migrate or immigration action. Like, how could I say no to this kid for her school? And, you know, it's going to, again, set her out differently from somebody else looking at the same type of job. Like, for me, that was like a big deal. And we have another girl this fall, she's a 2-year starter, and she's going to study abroad in England as well. And so, you know, my whole thing is it's not like they're losing eligibility. She can still come back and play 2 years, and you know, that whole thing. You know, and you know, she's going to be such a better person for us, because she's had to live on her own in a different country and try to make things work there, as opposed to rely necessarily on mommy and daddy here. So, you know, it's such a win-win situation for us. And again, you know, when you're getting scholarship money, you're not going to get a head coach that's going to say, oh yeah, I will totally pay for you to go to Europe and, not play soccer and whatever else you want to do, gallivant around type of a deal. So you're not going to find that experience. But, you know, at the Division III level, we get a lot of times when we're recruiting, players going, oh, I want to play at Division I because it's a better game of soccer. Well, I can tell you right now, it's not a better game of soccer. And I think that, you know, early on, I was like, oh, yeah, okay. But, like, the top 50 Division III schools can compete with the bottom 150 of Division I schools easy, you know? And there's some in the top 20 who can compete with the top 100 schools. You know, will they beat, you know, I would say there's consistently at the Division I level, there's probably 10 schools who can actually win an NCAA title, where at the Division III school level, you pretty much, you know, you have your ones that have sustained top level play, but, you know, pretty much on any given day, one team's going to come into that bracket that you would never have heard of and make a big run. You know, I think there's more opportunity for success. I think the other part of it that I find really interesting, and, you know, I'm a big stat person, your state schools run the roost for the most part. You know, you have your Stanford and BYU and that kind of stuff, but, like, most of them are state schools that really contribute and have a chance to win. Whereas Division III, I think there were 12 state schools that even made the NCAA tournament. The rest were all private schools. To me, that's another thing that I get excited about. Well, why can't we go in and challenge for a national title? Why can't we be one of those teams that'll be cheaper for you to come here and we could win a national title? So you get a lot of that type of thing. Okay, you know, here are things people would say are a negative about D3. Well, we can compete with players. You know, our spring game, we play Michigan Tech every year, you know, and everybody's like, oh, well, why don't you play somebody else? Well, I love the fact that they have scholarships play with what we have next year. And, you know, those are important for me to see kind of where we're at so I know what we need or where type of thing. You know, I don't want to necessarily play somebody. And we used to play, before I got here, they used to play Green Bay. And the last time they played them, they beat them 6-1. So here's, you know, a prime example of a Division III team playing a Division I team able to beat them. So I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions, is that the talent level at Division III isn't there. The, you know, like our recruiting class this year, we have a player who had Division I offers. They just chose to act on a Division III team as opposed to maybe the impact that they would have had on their Division I team, or what they were studying was going to be a little bit more in depth. And so they wanted to make sure that they were prepared for the next thing in life as well. So, you know, the impact that student athletes have are all going to be based on their experience. And, you know, I think even with in the recruiting atmosphere, you have all these kids who are saying, oh, I'm getting a full ride, where, you know, if that's the case, we have, you know, 29 kids on each Division I team that are getting full rides, which, you know, I'm pretty sure we don't run that wildly rampant in terms of NCAA rules.
Yeah.
You know, since they only 14. So it's just, you know, there's that, it's a common misconception that, you know, you can combine academic and athletic, but you're not getting a full ride athletically. If that makes any sense.
Absolutely. No, I was just sitting back and I'm sure people are like, Nick's still here. Because I was enjoying story time with Sean and Don, and I asked, I could just listen to you guys.
That's a great title. That's a new podcast. Story time with Sean and Don.
No, I'm just sitting back here. I'm like, gosh, like I just want to, like I want to be an outside observer of my own podcast right now. I was just enjoying story time, and it was so cool. I get to just have this. I don't know. I just got to sit back and really enjoy it. But yeah. A few questions kind of stem off what you were talking about a little bit. Like one of the things that I think is a big misconception with I'm a D3 byproduct as well. Like in the process, the recruiting process, like you coached high school, you coached club, you now you've coached at two different levels. What role do you think, like, for our high school and our club coaches that are listening to this, what is their primary role in the recruiting process?
You know, for the most part, I think most coaches, their main role is to facilitate, right? Kind of get involved, tell them that, you know, these are things you need to start doing at this particular age. You know, I think a lot of people don't realize how early we're starting recruiting. And so, you know, like I was talking to somebody about how we'll pretty much have our 2018 class done before school starts this year. And someone was like, what? I haven't even sent anything out and I'm a 2018. And I was like, oh, well, that might not work for you. Yeah. And so really kind of knowing what's out there in terms of rules and when to start. And, you know, if you're one of those kids that's looking at Division One team, you know, it probably isn't going to happen to play Division One, which isn't a bad thing, isn't a great thing if that's really what you're, you know, you think you're capable of playing. With that being said, it has to be a real look at where you're capable of playing. And I think that's another thing that we run into with Division III is we have coaches who are like, oh, she could play at your level. It's Division III or whatever, but they've never seen a Division III game. So you're pushing a kid to a level where, you know, they think that they should be able to do it. And then when they come in, it's totally different than what they thought it was supposed to be. You know, Division III, you know, sure, there are some teams where everybody plays and we all get our playing time and that if that's what that school wants. But for a lot of us, that's not kind of what we're after. So it's important to watch the team that you're possibly looking at going to, you know. Like I remember, I felt so bad about it because, you know, when I was working with FC Dallas, so many kids would be like, oh, I want to go to Stanford. And I'm like, well, you have the grades to go, but not so much from the soccer perspective of it. And it absolutely broke my heart to tell them that, but also, you know, it would be like, okay, well, what's your fallback school? Well, if you can't get into Stanford from a soccer perspective, where else would you want to go? And really kind of break down, you know, oh, well, they've got a lot of forwards returning. So you probably don't have any money if the scholarship money is something that becomes important to you, you know? And so they really need to do their homework in that avenue of knowing what the school wants. And, you know, the biggest thing, you know, we hear a lot is, oh, I'm too nervous to talk to the coach or whatever. Well, at some point you're going to have to talk to them if you're going to be playing for them. You know, so, you know, the biggest thing is to start the dialogue and, you know, not let mom and dad do it. You know, the kids come into it more than anything because, you know, obviously they're the ones playing, but, you know, we want to know whether or not you want to be here, not your mom and dad want you to be here type of a deal. So it really becomes important. You know, I can't think of, you know, we pretty much end the conversation with the parents if the parents the one talking to us all the time, because, you know, I don't want them to relive their college experience with me. I want their daughter to live their college experience with me type of a deal. You know, so it just becomes really hard for some people to tell them an honest opinion of where they should be able to play if they've never seen the game at that level. And I think that that's a hard thing for a lot of people to grasp. That whole thing of watching soccer. Have you watched a college soccer game? Have you watched a college soccer game at Division I? Have you watched it at NAIA? Have you watched it at Division II? You know, so you can start alleviating a lot of the programs that maybe you thought you wanted to go to, but not necessarily are at that level. See it in person, it is drastically different than what it looks like on videotape or, you know, what your friend said it looked like.
Yeah. No. And I think, well, like to go off that for a few ways, one, I mean, I went to a D3 school, but the two schools I was down to were Wisconsin Green Bay and the school I ended up going to, which was Loras. And I remember I had that same misconception when I walked to Loras. I just assumed that because I picked the D3 school, I was like, yeah, this is going to be easy. I'm going to start. I'm going to be the best player, because I was in my high school. Or I was one of the best in my high school, one of the best in my club. And you get there and you're like, all right, everyone is the exact same way. Everyone's the best player. And so, I mean, it's a grind, especially when you get to some schools. And I think that, like, for so many people, they just – it, one of the things that bugs me the most is when someone says, oh, that's a D2 player, that's a D3 player. Like, how do you know? Like, how do you know what they're going to look like in college? How do you know what that program mm-hmm. is doing? Because the same thing with college coaches, we're not recruiting the players that we currently – the level mm-hmm. of player that we currently have. We're recruiting the level of player that we want to get to.
Correct.
And so even, right. even with a lot of that, yep. it's one of those things that you got to – if you like the school, you like the coach, you like where they are going with stuff, then help them along that way. But I think another question I kind of have going with you, or unless you were going to say something quick.
Well, no, I was going to say, like, a lot of times you have that whole experience, but like one of my favorite things since I've been here, when the Division I kids come back and transfer in and they think, you know, I don't know how many times I hear, oh my God, I thought this was going to be so much easier. Or, oh, some of these kids can play. Nuh-uh, really? Oh, I'm so glad that you came back. You know, it's like this whole mentality is, you know, let me slap you in the face to welcome you back, kind of a deal. And that becomes important. So,
yeah, no,
yeah, that's absolutely a huge misconception.
Like, one of the things that, I mean, I personally run into a lot more is I always wonder what conversations the coaches are, like, the other coaches are having, and which conversations the high school and the club coaches are having with their players too. Because when I give them an evaluation, and again, we talked about this a few weeks ago with Coach Phipps, that, I mean, don't ask me a question that you don't want to know the answer to, because you're going to get the answer regardless of whether you like it or not. And how often do you feel you run into that issue with some players that it's down to you and one other school, and they're asking, like, hey, coach, what do I need to improve? And you have to give them maybe an answer that you don't necessarily think is going to be taken well by them.
To me, if a coach never gives you any feedback in the recruiting process, it should be a big, huge red flag. When a student athlete comes in and talks to me about wanting to go here or whatever, the big thing for me is, I don't want them at the level they're at right now. I want them to keep getting better. You know, that ascension of becoming a better player and better person. And so I want them. And it may be, you know, your speed of play has to be a lot faster. Your first touch is a touch of a donkey. Like, we can't have that. You're going to get buried for that in at the next level. And so, you know, that becomes one of the hardest things to tell a kid. You know, just like when there's a kid that, you know, we had a kid the other day come for an ID camp, and the kid was like, you're my first choice and whatever. And I was just like, right now you wouldn't make our team. And here are things that you have to do to improve to get there. And it's not uncommon that you don't have a kid that does the work to get there. And, you know, if it's truly where, like, we had a girl this semester who we were looking at for this coming year, and she came to an ID camp, and I said, you know, I'm indifferent. I can't tell whether or not you're going to be one of those kids that we could use. And then she came to another camp, and it was like, oh my God, you know what? I'm going to invite you into preseason. I think you have the speed and your ability to finish a ball. I think we could use that. So here's a kid that we've had this open dialogue the whole time, and now she's getting her chance to come here and play. And I don't think players are capable of it. It's just, you know, what becomes important to them, and is this really your first choice, or, you know, are you settling, or do you, you know, is there something else there? And so, you know, like, honestly, it's a red flag for me if a coach has nothing but positive things to say to you, because truly, you know, like, I've played with some great players, and they always had some type of negative feedback, probably not as much as I got, but, like, they got some, you know what I mean? So no, you know, I have yet to see somebody play the perfect game, even when you are playing those 6-7-0 games against somebody. So there's always something somebody can work on.
Absolutely. No, and one of the things that actually when you were talking that kind of like generated another question, I have a lot of coaches that are coming into or around my area that are coming into club positions where they ask me things like, what is your opinion of ID camps? Where should I send players that are looking to play in college? Different things like that. And I have my opinions about different ID camps and especially across different levels. What is your opinion about the value of ID camps and how, like, for club coaches, maybe your high school coaches looking to help their kids move on, like, what should their expectations be going into them?
Well, if you're really interested into a specific college, so like, let's say you were looking at UWSP, like the best way to know whether that college coaching staff is a fit for you would be to go to their camp. Now, if you have a list of freaking 30 colleges you want to go to, it's probably not cost effective to go to all 30 of those. You know, the other part I would say is to find out how many of the kids that are currently on their roster came for those ID camps. Like for us, if, you know, there were kids that we were looking at for that we weren't even looking at and other schools were looking at them and they came into our ID camp because we sent them something saying, hey, we saw you play. We really like what we saw. We'd love to get to know you more. So they come in and they have an interaction with us at our ID camp, and a rate of 75% of those kids coming to our ID camp that end up playing on our team because it's that interaction they have with me and with some of our players who were working at the camp. So, you know, that is the biggest way for us because we don't have the budget that everybody else does. You know, we stretch it as much as we can and try to find ways to do that. But, you know, we don't have the big plush budgets of a lot of the Power Five Division One conferences. So,
yeah,
you know, that's a struggle. But, you know, at the same time, if I'm, you know, looking at like a, I don't know, let's say if I'm looking at a North Carolina, like I may go to North Carolina's ID camp or their summer camps or whatever, and there probably is good coaches there. So now I get more bang for my buck because you got these other coaches who are like, well, they may not all go to Carolina, so I might as well go there and recruit type of a deal. So they go to those camps to recruit. And it becomes a huge thing. So, you know, it depends on what you're trying to get out of those camps. You know, if it's a school you're really looking at, by all means, go to them because it doesn't hurt you, you know. And so the only thing I would suggest is making sure you don't walk right up to the coach and say, hey, I kind of tweaked this, so I may not play very well because it's not very appealing, even if you did tweak something.
No, absolutely. And like the last question I have, just to kind of allow you to sell yourself a little bit, like when you're looking at recruits, whether they're coming to your ID camp, whether you're recruiting them, just talking to them in the process, what are some off the field things that you're looking for as players? Because I mean, typically we're all looking for similar on the field things. What are some things off the field that you really want to get out of players that are coming to play for you?
You know, it was really funny. I had this discussion at our last ID camp because like certain stuff are just really painful for me. So, and you know, as a coach, you'll find it funny. So we walk up and, you know, there's probably 17 kids at the ID camp. And I walk up and I said, all right, guys, what type of music do you want to listen to? And nobody said a word. Right. And you're just kind of like, anyone? Bueller, like there's nothing. And I was like, okay, Radio Disney it is, you know, or whatever. And like you see the cringes, you see kind of, and I was like, oh no, let's do country. Should do opera. You guys want to play to opera? Because that could be entertaining. Hello. And the girls are like, why are you asking? And I was like, have an opinion. Like, you know, show me that you care enough to say, dude, I hate that. You know, and stand out from the crowd because you're going to be put in situations where that's going to be the norm for you in college, you know? And so do you be passive aggressive and, you know, get into a car with somebody who's drinking? I mean, obviously that's a huge step from not picking your right music or whatever, but
you know, but that is kind of, you know, if you don't have a say about your music, are you going to finally speak up at that point? Like, what's the point that something matters to you? And so those are things I'm looking at in our student athletes all the time. I'm also looking at, you know, do you have a personality? You know, is it, you know, hopefully it's not one that I find annoying or whatever, because that makes for a long 4 years. But at the same time, it's on both ends. You know, do you find my personality annoying? Because some people do, and I get it. And we're not, it's not going to all be, you know, candles and roses and whatever else you assume with joy. But, you know, is it going to be a respectful type of relationship? And so you're looking for kids that have the personality who, you know, when things get rough, they find that way to kind of poke fun of themselves, but also kind of someone else and add something to that team chemistry, you know, because those are big things to me. You know, like, I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be around the Debbie Downer who sucks the life out of you, which, you know, and again, going back to my freshman year, I was that kid. I totally get it. I was, you know, like I said before, I was the kid who had to memorize the true joy of life to be used for a purpose recognized by oneself as being a feverish, selfish little clod of grievances and ailments, complaining that the world does not devote itself to making you happy. Right? George,
that's awesome.
Like, I was that kid. Thanks. And that was long, long time ago. That was 91. But, you know, those are things huge. You know, are you going to suck the life out of us? Because there's certain times where negative things happen. How are you going to embrace that day? You know, are you going to suck the rest of the life out of us? Or are you going to find a way to get a little mojo and turn it into an optimistic event? You know, and those are, you know, those are the kids that I love being around, who are just full of life and full of energy. And, you know, even the stupidest thing that somebody does, you know, and, you know, we have this one girl who every time we have Radio Disney on at camp or whatever, she just belts out Milan like there's no tomorrow. And just, you know, and everybody's like, oh my God, you know all the words. And she's like, oh my God, yes, Disney. I mean, besides somebody dying right away and, you know, losing your mom or whatever Disney movie happens, like, it's really kind of uplifting.
That's why I watch Moana like once a week.
There's sometimes more than that. That's awesome.
No, I'm grateful for my mom not letting me watch those when I was little, because everybody dies right in the beginning. But I get that now. But, like, you know, like, I want to be around somebody like that who just makes you feel, because there are days, I mean, you know, any coach that says that they don't have those days, you know, they're totally lying. Like, I mean, how can we not love what we do? But there are days where you get out of a meeting and you're just like, gosh, are you kidding me? That's 30 minutes I can't get back, or, you know, and it's just like a class for our student athletes. So, you know, are you going to embrace that, or are you going to, you know, you may need a little help to get over that bump. And that's where teammates rely on, and coaches rely on those same qualities from those teammates. So I think that becomes an important thing. And if you find that person who just is so joyous and just fun to be around, you want to be around them, and it's contagious. And I absolutely love that. And, you know, when I first got here, like, we had a ton of Debbie Downers, and I was just like, my God, I don't know if I'm going to get through the season, you know, let alone even think about 3 years from now or whatever, because it was just like, you know, we had so many players that were making excuses for why they weren't doing stuff instead of just doing it, you know, by the time that they finished their dissertation on why they didn't do it, it was like, you could have just gone ahead and done it already and be done with it.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, I think those become very big factors that I think a lot of student athletes nowadays don't really think about. And they think, oh, I'm that good. Well, if I'm, you know, I look at it as, if I was that good and I didn't play hardly at all my freshman year until I flipped that switch, you know, God, I just think of how big of a waste my freshman year was, because, you know, I wouldn't want to be around me either, thinking back into those times, you know. And it was a hard lesson to learn, but I'm extremely grateful for it, because now life, you know, I don't suck the joy out of life anymore.
No, that is awesome. And I think we're all looking for those players that, I mean, at the end of the day, that we want to hang out with, you know, because the soccer, I always tell them, for them and their college experience, soccer should be the dessert. It should be the best part about everything. And for me, like, my best part of my day should be the 2 to 3 hours I get to be out on the field actually doing the stuff I love. And if I have people that suck the energy out of it, it's just not gonna be the fun that I want it to be. And so having that ability to just bring something, like you talked about, where you're bringing something to the table that just makes everyone around you better. Recruits definitely don't realize that that is such a key factor when you're looking at them.
Mm-hmm. I can see it. You know, I joke and say, you know, I watch it when I watch a team play, I watch the interaction between the kid and the parent, because I'm going to be the parent in a year. You know, are they smarting off to mom and dad as they're leaving the field? Are they griping about not having a full water jug, even though the game's going on? You know, what is it, you know, because that, if that's going to be how their relationship with me will be. And I don't want that. I want it to be a very respectful relationship. Like I tell our players all the time, that if you think there's a different way to do something, I am all about you trying to convince me, because one, it's going to make you a better player because you're thinking that in depth about the game. And then the other part of it is, I'm fine with it as long as it's respectful, because the coaching staff talks like that to one another, where we say, well, I think this would be a better situation here. She can do this, she can do that, you know, but it's respectful type of a deal. Cause I don't want anybody on our staff that's a yes, ma'am. Like, you know, I want somebody who's going to make me have to defend what it is I'm thinking. So if you come in as a player and that's your personality, and you're, and you know, I was the same way as a player. It used to bug me when Anson would be like, because I'm asking you to do that. Well, why wouldn't I just do it this way? Or, you know, put this spin on it, because it makes sense to come this way. The defender's got to turn, it's right into her feet. And, you know, that type of a thing, you know? So I think that is a good quality to have, if you can find a way, because no offense, when they get into the real world, you're not going to love what your boss is making you do. But if you can offer up a suggestion that may make it easier, and you do it in a way that's respectful, then maybe you can change that boss's mind. But if you are very disrespectful with how you do it, then you're not going to get them to do anything for you.
You have to come on our show again, because like I still have 20 more questions and we've already went over an hour of your time. So you're talking about somebody sucking out 30 minutes of your life that you'll never get back. Unfortunately, I think we just did an hour of your life. We enjoyed having you on, and we could sit here and talk for another 2 hours if we really wanted to, but you definitely have to come back on our show for us.
I would love to. And like I said, I think you guys provide a phenomenal service for us coaches to exchange ideas and do it in an environment where you may not be, you know, that it's an okay thing to do. Like, we don't all have the answers, and sometimes we get a whole situation that comes up and somebody else may have another way of dealing with it that you may never have thought of. And, you know, the ability to share answers. I mean, think about it from a drill standpoint. You know, if I'm looking at something for, and I'm watching you do a drill, and I can take that, I think automatically, ooh, I want to manipulate that to do this. You know, that's a perfect thing, but we are almost scared in a way to express those same ideas from off field stuff. You know, why reinvent the wheel if you don't have to?
Yeah.
I love what you guys are doing, and keep it up.
We're trying somehow, some way we are trying. Where can people get a hold of you at on the internet?
Twitter account is bootit05, BOOTIT05. And that email, or that's also my personal email. It's at yahoo.com. I came up with that from sitting on a lot of college sidelines, recruiting, listening to parents yell at their kid to boot it. So,
the classic American parent soccer line.
But
So I have that. And then obviously my email address at work is dawn.crow@uwsp.edu.
You talked earlier about, you know, people saying that they knew you and you'd be like, I have no clue who that is. Nick and I from now on out are going to tell people that we know you.
And I'll deny it.
Completely. Oh, man.
I have no idea who.
I was really hoping that we would get the comment of, yeah, whenever you guys text, like, I'm like, oh my God, is that Sean and Nick? Oh my God, give me the phone. This is really cool. But yeah, I see how it is now. Well, Don, thanks for coming on. We enjoyed it. And I'm sure that we're going to have you on again because there's so many more stories. I want to get into the stories about your prank pulling business back in college. So we'll have to revisit that at another time.
Yes. I love a good prank. I love a good prank.
We'll do a part two here fairly soon where we can just talk the pranks.
Awesome. Love it. You guys keep it up and good luck with everything coming up.
Thank you very much. Same to you.
All right. Have a good one.
See you, Don. So that was our interview this week with Don Crow. And I don't know about you, man, but I could listen to her tell stories for days.
I didn't want the interview to stop. Like, we were for over an hour and I was like, I want to keep talking for another 3 hours.
Like, I just, like, eventually I'm sure people would probably tune us off, but I could just listen to her talk and tell stories and talk about soccer for days. She just has so much fun stuff to talk about. I think the thing I loved the most about it was the fact that, like, she messed up a few times. Like, she talked about how, like, when she was a player, that the first year she got to UNC, like, she didn't become a first team All-American as a freshman. You know, she had to grind a little bit. She had to work really hard and had to really have some tough conversations with her coach to get through stuff. And I think that was very cool to watch, because I think we've all seen players that go one of two ways when they hit adversity. You have players that really just break through that wall, and you have players that stop and they turn around, they walk home, and they take their ball with them. And so I think that the fact that she did that is made her trajectory, not only as a player, but as a coach, to where it's at today. And it was just cool to listen to and see someone that was at that high of a level still have to struggle with stuff and still have to get through all that she had to get through.
Her mom straight up said, I'm not coming to watch you play because you never play. My guy, like, does it, I mean, if that's not the, you know, Don used the quote, slap in the face, like, I can't fathom. Of course, again, we've both kind of talked about our playing careers. I was never by any means a superstar. I can't imagine being that big fish in a little pond like she was in Texas, then going to UNC and being the little fish in a big pond. And just, you know, and she mentioned, like, she was very arrogant getting there and things along those lines. What I really enjoyed was the fact that she went to a sports psychiatrist. And I think that that's something more that, you know, nowadays all stuff now about mental health and things along those lines, sports, it's mental health is crazy in sports. And the fact that, you know, she had to go that far to get herself back to the way she was, back to, you know, the plane that she was before she got to UNC, I think speaks volumes for her, because, like, she admitted, like, who knows if she would have kept being the way she was, like, what would have turned out, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's a big thing that I really came across, of the fact that, you know, a lot of these kids, you know, they get so down on themselves, and it's like, and it has various variables. Sometimes I've seen the parents be the cause of it. You know, because we've all had a bad game, got in the car and got chewed out by our parents because we played bad. But I've seen the parents be really over the top about it. And I think that's something to where these kids now, if they just open up about that stuff and be able to hit the reset button mentally about their play, because we've all had very, very good seasons. We've all had a very, very bad season. And if you can hit that mental reset button, and if you have that point where you're like, okay, this isn't me, who I am as a player, I got to change the game right now. And, like, much respect to her on, you know, and it's sad that it took the part of their first trip or their first road trip, going back to her home state of Texas to play in front of her friends and family, and she doesn't even make the team to travel. Like, I couldn't even imagine what Mama Tracy would say if I was like, "Hey, Mom, I'm not on the team coming back home to play this weekend." Like, I think my mom probably would have drove to my school and like slapped me for that.
No joke. Yeah. And I think
like, I can't go ahead.
No. Yeah. And like, I think one of my like favorite things is again, like when she can still say that quote that Anton made her memorize from 1991 and a few episodes back, people are still listening through all these. That was the quote that I couldn't remember. And I was trying to tell you and Sam about that. She actually still remembers 7 years later now. And so yeah. I think that it obviously resonated with her and stuck and made her the person she is today, or at least a part of the person that she is today. And I think that watching or being able to hear that was so much, it was just fun to listen to, man. I just had so much fun just listening to her talk. And just, I was like, I just don't know. Like for me, I was listening to her and I was like, man, I think I just want to send all my players to her. Like just to have her coach everyone.
That's your new recruiting pitch. Hey, come to my school just to go play at that school.
Like, if you're not going to come to me, go play for Don Crow.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that, like you just said, thinking of in my head, you know, her talking about, you know, when she's with her team and then things that she does for him, how incredible of a situation are those girls in? To have this player who's played at the highest of high levels, who's coached at the highest levels, to have them now there at their school and the experience that they get with her. Because, you know, like she talked about, like she's definitely matured as a player and a coach, going from what she was as a player to taking those experiences in her playing career and her coaching career to what she is now. It sounds like a, you know, If I go to her ID camp, that's a coach I want to go play for.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't big league anybody. I mean, hell, she was on this podcast. So she's definitely not big leaguing anybody because she agreed to come on here. But I just think what a cool coach for, you know, you always hear of like people, oh, I would never send my kid to play there. Blah, blah, blah. Like, I know my daughter's only 3, but if she wants to go play for Don right now, she can go. Like, I would have no problem with that. And I think that speaks volumes to the coach that Dawn is, and not even so much the coach, but just the person that she is. Because like I said at the beginning, like you walk away from this conversation feeling like you know her, and you don't want the conversation to end.
No, absolutely, and it's one of those things that I hope that people get the chance to listen to this and hear her story, and again, I hope we get the chance to get her back on because she is a person that so many people can learn from and that I just want to keep talking to.
And she pulled a lot of pranks on Anson Dorrance. And we're going to get into that in part 2. So you got to keep listening. As we wrap up, we want to thank Social Media for the High School Athletes for putting on this show for everyone. You can follow them on Facebook and Twitter at HS Social Media, or go to their website, www.socialstudentathletes.com. I'm Sean Soderling. You can find me on Twitter at Coach Soderling. Nick, once again, where can they find you?
I am at Coach N Rizzo on Twitter. It's the best place to find me.
Or you can find him at the bar telling everybody he's related to the Cubs player and everybody hooks him up with drinks.
Yep, that is definitely the other place. Or the soccer field. Those 3 places. Only 3 places.
What a week it's been. We're going to get into it next week with another guest. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Nick, I'll catch you later, my guy.
See you later, brother.